This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise show. I'm Christopher Jones, and joining me today is my colleague from our original series show, Standard Orbit. It's Landru. Drew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. Joy to you, friends, in case you expect that from me.
Good to have you with me today. And, of course, for those who don't listen to Standard Orbit, who don't know Landru, his real name is Drew Stewart. His parents did not actually name him Landru, but they should have.
They should. If I ever have a child, he will be called Landru. Landru Val Stewart. It'll be great.
Oh, wow. Wow. You're just like the supreme planet governing mechanism.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, Drew, today I wanted to have you on because we often talk about Enterprise on this show in terms of how it is as a standalone series. You know, like it is its own show. You know, it can be viewed as not a prequel to the original series, but just a television show. And I think that that's how a lot of people enjoy it. And a lot of people have gotten into Enterprise, not so much as a Star Trek show, but just because they like the characters. But it is ultimately set up to be a prequel to the original series, and you being our TOS guy, and you have fairly recently started watching Enterprise, and you've gotten through the first two seasons right now, I wanted to hear your thoughts on the show from a TOS perspective.
Well, as you said, most people try, I don't know if they can view it as not being a prequel or try not to view it as being a prequel. While I was watching it, I was trying to view it as its own entity, not necessarily its own science fiction property, but kind of like the JJ-verse alternate timeline kind of thing, so that I wouldn't be upset at things that I ended up getting upset about. Like, look, Ferengi. they immediately go to the Ferengi, and you're like, really?
Well, everyone got upset about that one, Drew.
Yeah, and then it's just like, oh, we'll make it better. We'll do the Borg. That's worse.
Is it? Because, see, I think the Borg, I thought, worked out well. Okay, well, we'll get to those as we do episodes. So you've already gone into the first question that I wanted to ask you, the first topic, which were your expectations going in.
Well, unfortunately, the unhype had gotten to me. I watched, what is it, Broken Bow, that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. I watched the pilot live on UPN in my dorm room, and it was okay. I wasn't super impressed. I didn't like, it's weird, the things that I like now about the show, I didn't like then.
Yeah,
I thought it was too futuristic. I thought that the Enterprise design was too much like the Akira, and I thought that the technology with the flat screen monitors and everything was just too futuristic. I couldn't see how they were going to meld it together with the 60s era future technology. But once I actually started watching it, I began to understand that it was about our future leading into TOS. Mm-hmm. It's more of a sequel for us than it is a prequel for TOS.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Is how I eventually started viewing it.
Mm-hmm.
At least technology-wise. Because if we built something nowadays, we'd have a bunch of flat panel monitors. We'd have We'd have the buttons. We'd have the low ceilings. I really like the, I mentioned this on Standard Orbit last week, that I like that the NX-01 feels like a bridge.
Yeah.
A bridge between us and TOS, and that TOS feels like a bridge between the NX-01 and the D. And I think it all does flow really well together. Character-wise, I like that the humans are, you can see that they're trying to lean toward the TOS ideals. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like they're trying to go against, go against your expectations of Star Trek because that's the hip and cool thing to do. I honestly think that Roddenberry would admit that people in that era would be imperfect and would make mistakes like this.
Do you think that was a general fan perception that people felt that Brandon Braga and Rick Berman were making certain changes because it was the hip or cool thing to do, or just intentionally trying to buck the system of Star Trek?
I think there's a few things where they were trying to be, to do both, to buck the system and be hip and cool. Mm-hmm. Like the T'Pol's super sexiness.
Yeah.
I think is played into a lot. And I don't know if that comes in later in the series, like, well, she shows her body because that's what Vulcans did. Cause it's like, you look at like T'Pol, which thankfully they never look, you know,
right.
That was, and we talked about that in this week's episode during Amok Time.
Yeah.
That originally T'Pol was going to be T'Pol.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't understand how they would have written a character, especially that character who would grow up to be this high priestess who barely speaks English.
Okay. Well, now I will, you haven't gotten into season 4 yet. I won't tell you when it happens, but I will tell you that T'Pol does turn up in the series.
I did read that somewhere.
Okay.
I read that. See, I kind of wish that I'd gotten further ahead because I hear that the fourth season has a lot more TOS ties, which I'm really looking forward to.
The fourth season it's very good. But it is at times like overboard TOS fanboy moments.
Okay. I look forward to seeing if I appreciate those.
But it's good. It's actually quite a good season, and it's well written, but it is very different. You know, when I told you, I said, Drew, because you did this for The Orb as well. You came on and you talked to me about your impressions of Deep Space Nine, watching it for the first time, having heard about it for so long, and finally deciding to sit down and really watch it and what you thought about it. And then I said, why don't you come on Warp 5 and let's talk about this experience as well with Enterprise. But of course, you know, as you being the TOS guy, it would be very interesting as a lead-in. And you said, well, I've watched seasons 1 and 2. I'm just starting season 3. I haven't seen season 4 yet. And I told you what? It's like 3 different shows, really, right? There's season 1 and 2. Then there's season 3, and then there's season 4. So those were your expectations. I love the idea of it's a sequel to us. I've thought about it in terms of, yes, it feels natural to me that they're bridging the gap from us, but I've never actually put it in those words that the show is a sequel to our lives now, a sequel to us. That is a very good way of looking at it.
I assume that they had a eugenics war at some point, but...
Well, what about characters? Now, you've already mentioned T'Pol a little bit. Starting with Archer, in terms of a captain, this is the other thing that I hear a lot of times about Enterprise, is people say they don't like Archer because he's not a captain. He doesn't feel like a captain. Whereas I think he's written extremely well because they are the first ship going out there into deep space in this way to explore. And it's just as new for him. You know, he might be a leader within the organization on Earth, but that doesn't mean that he is somehow better prepared for the experiences in deep space than, you know, Tripp or Malcolm or anyone else. You know, maybe only T'Pol would be better prepared, and Phlox would be better prepared for what they're going to find out there. So I think he's really well written as a captain, but what did you think? Being accustomed to Kirk and his leadership style, and then you come in, you find Archer.
Well, I'm gonna say something that's not. It might ruffle feathers, maybe. I don't know, but I don't think Archer's a very good captain. He's a great character,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that he's a good captain. He's got the leadership things, but I mean, and this is written. It's not like he's a badly written character. These are character purpose driven things. He's not prepared. Right. And I don't think Earth is prepared. I think maybe the Vulcans are right, at least in these first two seasons. Like, look, you guys aren't ready for this. And they're like, yeah, sure we are. And they just blast around and go blow up things and are unprepared, like Silent Enemy, when they run into people who don't communicate with them and just start shooting at them. And that's it. Like, that's the entire episode. Well, it's not the entire episode, but we'll get into that.
But you're right. He's not prepared. And he's written that way. And that's the way I think he should be written to convey the message of the
exactly.
show, though. Yeah.
If he was, you know, this perfect captain who never needed advice and, you know, shot from the hip and bedded all the women, it would be aping Kirk. And it's not what society would have used back then. It's not what right. they would have needed. They needed somebody. I mean, they needed somebody a little bit more prepared, but they also needed someone who wasn't afraid to go out there and try, which is what Archer does.
Yeah. And Kirk never got in trouble because his dog peed on a holy tree.
This is true. Kirk didn't have a dog to... Yeah. Porthos, that's weird. No, man, I love the dog. I love dogs.
Yeah?
I've got a dog sitting next to me right now, but... That's weird. Like, I'm going to go into space. Like, I think that's weirder than taking your family on the Enterprise D.
Really?
This is just like, I'm going to take my dog into space. He has no idea what's going on. You can explain to your kids, you know, if the gravity goes out, you know, X, Y, and Z. Or, you know, if the ship's getting shot at, or if, you know, you're low on oxygen, don't do this and go here. The dog has no idea what's going on. The dog just wants cheese. That's all the dog wants.
See, I love the fact that Archer has Porthos on the ship because it's another one of those things that makes the show feel closer to us. Like, yes, mm-hmm. you know, Picard is not going to take a dog with him on the ship. And I know that Data has a cat for whatever reason, but
yeah, wait a minute.
but I like the fact that Archer has Porthos, and there are great moments. You know, one of my favorite moments is in Strange New World when they take the shuttle pod down, they land on the planet, the door opens, and Porthos takes off running across the field just because it really gives you that feeling like, wow, this is like us landing on a planet for the first time because. We're the people who would take our dogs with us.
Yeah, but then is it Trip that makes that joke? Go where no dog has gone before?
That's right. I don't know if I needed that line, but the visual of Porthos running across the field was quite nice, I think.
Yes, that visual is great.
Well, what did you think about other characters beyond Archer?
I like Trip.
Trip's my favorite.
I think it's weird that he's just the guy who, you know, like two episodes in, he's, you know, alien pregnant
yeah.
you know, with the wrist nipple, which I think we talked about on Ready Room.
We did. In fact, we named that episode of the Ready Room Wrist Nipple.
Right. That's why I remember that episode. The episode of the show, not an episode of TRR. But I like Trip. I like Reed. I like Reed a lot. Mostly like his accent, and he's just like, oh, can't we just shoot something? Yes, please, just to shoot something. That's fantastic. I like pretty much everybody. I like Mayweather when he's in use. I mean, everybody. I don't think there's anybody that I don't care for, really. I'm interested in knowing more about each of them.
Yeah.
Hoshi's a little overplayed. Especially getting into the third season episodes that I've seen, I kind of want her to go away, but.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. She just seems to be kind of a know-it-all, and I don't know. But she's also a scaredy cat, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, she is a nervous person. I've never thought of her as a know-it-all. That's interesting. Well, what does she do that gives you that feeling?
I don't even remember now. Just the feeling I get from her. Like, I'm going to translate, you know, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to translate this because I know it's just weird to, like, I can figure out somebody's language. Just, you know, keep saying words to me and I'll eventually figure it out. It's like, what? I don't know about that.
It's funny.
She's like a mutant, like X-Men mutant kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, absorb languages.
I'm picturing words like flowing into her body of words.
What I do like is that when her universal translator, whatever, isn't working, or when they encounter a new species, they don't understand each other.
Yeah,
I really appreciate that, you know, the writers don't cheat and say, oh, you know, well, these people just happen to know English. No, when they run into Klingons, they don't know Klingonese. So they're just here, block, chuck, chuck. And they're like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about, buddy.
That was either a Klingon or it was a Szechuan dish, one or the other. Right?
Yes.
I think I ordered that recently.
I think I've ordered that at my local restaurant.
Right. Yeah, see, that's
the thing.
I should
go in there speaking Klingon next time. We'll see what happens.
See, that's the thing for me with Hoshi is that I do like the fact that they illustrate the need to figure out these languages versus even when we get to the TOS era, with the exception of Star Trek VI, where they actually pull out giant printed dictionaries of Klingon. You know, it's kind of like everything just works and we can understand everybody. So right. Just from that technical point there, coming at the series from TOS, you do appreciate the attempts to show that it takes some real work for us to understand aliens.
I appreciate the, you know, oh, our phase cannons aren't very good. Oh, our warp field isn't very good. Oh, we don't have shields.
Yeah.
The kind of stuff that people were complaining about when it was airing, or at least the general internet talk that I was not involved in, but just saw from the outside, just all the stuff that people were complaining about, I do tend to like.
Yeah. I think that everyone likes it a bit more now that we've moved further away from it. You know, it's interesting. I've been going through recently and have been doing some cleaning on, well, it's not really cleaning on my computer after that many years, but I have stuff that's archived to disk, you know, like old articles. And even when I was doing research, when I was writing at the time that Enterprise was being developed and was about to launch, and, you know, I had saved articles from different publications online that were being published right at that time. And what's interesting is that the media was really praising Enterprise initially and talking about how it was a breath of fresh air and sort of the things that you're talking about liking right now. And then that tone really changed a few months later after the fan reception of the show started to diminish and sour a little bit. Because Broken Bow, I think, was quite successful and people really liked that one. And it was kind of after that it sort of started to go downhill. But now you see it swinging the other way. And now people are saying, like you are, that, you know, these are aspects of the show that I really like.
Yeah. What really makes me, you know, I never liked the design of the NX-01 until Doug Drexler started his blog, where mm-hmm. he broke down. You know, he's like, it's not like I just took a digital model from, you know, this first contact ship and changed some things here. I built this from the ground up. Yeah. You know, it's got the docking ports that would fit into the International Space Station today, you know, figuring that Earth would still be using that standard. It's got, you know, this panel can come back and we can put whatever we want here, like a Swiss Army knife. Like, oh, if we need a tractor beam, it comes out of here or whatever. And mm-hmm. like every little design piece is meant to lead to the TOS era.
Yeah.
And especially with his refit design, which adds the engineering section. And you can see this is what the evolution was supposed to be. It was supposed to be this flat thing to the secondary hull, to the Enterprise. I mean, it's, I appreciate it. I'm a big ship guy, and I think that's one of the reasons why I was like, I want to get into this now because I can appreciate the design more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He put an amazing amount of thought into the design of the NX-01.
More than they did into the Defiant, but I've complained about the Defiant until I'm blue in the face.
What are your thoughts on Travis, real quick? Because he's a character who is generally remembered as having nothing to do on the show. Although I've noticed in my most recent rewatch of the series, he has more to do in season one in particular than we remember him having. And so since it's fresher in your mind, what are your thoughts on Travis?
Well, I expected him to not do anything. And then there were like two episodes in a row that featured him.
Mm-hmm.
Like one where they went and visited his family. And then I think the next episode, he's like the only one who can like rock climb. I forget exactly what that was about. Rescuing Vulcan miners, Vulcan archaeologists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think is the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got a big role in that. I like him when he's used. I don't necessarily like his family. Like that particular episode where he's the focus.
When they go to the horizon.
When they're on the horizon. I think he could have been utilized. I think the people would have liked him had they actually done something with him.
Yeah. Yeah,
because what they do, his problem is he does do the stereotype every time he opens his mouth. And he's like, I was born in space. Yes, we get it. But had they given him other things to do, but you can say that about any character or TV show. If it had been written differently, then it'd be a completely different show.
Did I mention I was born in space?
Yeah, I was born in space.
You know, it's...
Earth is so weird. What with this gravity and all? Shut up.
Oh, and the sky lights up in the daytime. What's that about? That's something that Rick Berman and Brandon Braga both have said in the interviews on the Blu-rays, is that the character of Travis being a space boomer, it's a cool idea, but once you establish that he was born in space, then there's nowhere to go with that. Because now everybody's in space, and so how does it really make him that special?
Yeah. Especially because we're used to everybody we know in all the other series probably being born in space.
Right.
So it's not a big deal. And oh, sure, he's the first, but it's not like he's the first Vulcan to serve on a Federation ship or anything important.
It's an interesting point, but it's not something that you can sustain.
It's not a character trait.
Right.
And I think that's the character trait they gave him was he was born in space. No, that's not a character trait.
Right. Well, let's talk about episodes a little bit. What are some of your favorite episodes from the first season?
Well, going back through the list, I grabbed a couple of them. I already mentioned Silent Enemy. I like the idea that I think it's the episode that shows that they're unprepared,
mm-hmm.
you know, that they're unarmed, that they're just out there like, hey, everybody, we're from Earth. And then these aliens don't give a crap and they start shooting at them and they're like, no, we're totally cool. And nobody cares because nobody knows what Earth is.
Right.
I do like that about the whole series in general. Earth, what? Who cares? Cause they're just random space people at this juncture in the universe.
It highlights that for us and for our crew, we think Earth is the center of everything still, I think, right? I mean, we know, like, from a scientific standpoint, of course, it's not the center of anything. But in our minds, it's still, like, everyone's going to say, oh, you're from Earth. Yeah, I've heard about that place, right?
It's just like, well, I'm from, you know, if you were from, I don't know, someplace totally awesome, and then you go to Africa, and like, yeah, I'm from Los Angeles. What?
Right.
Who cares? You know, you're in Africa now. But yeah, I like Silent Enemy, that the idea of having a race, like we never see them or hear them. They're there and they kick our butts and then we learn from it. We run with our tail between our legs and then we learn from it. For some reason that one really stuck with me. Looking it up again, apparently that's also the episode where Hoshi is tasked with finding out what Trip's favorite food is.
Malcolm's favorite food.
Malcolm's favorite food. Yeah. So that they can make him a birthday cake.
Yeah.
Which is a weird B plot for such a, you know, I mean, maybe they were trying to balance it out, but it seems like, and there were, I did this with Deep Space Nine too. I tweeted a lot of the things, a lot of the A and B plots, and they read like my TOS season 4 plots or the TNG season 8 plots. Just, yeah. What? Hoshi is tasked. It's her vital, most important task. While Malcolm's trying to figure out how to blow people up and blows up part of a moon, pineapple. Pineapple is the answer.
Right. Except he's allergic to it.
I also like Shuttle Pod 1.
Yeah.
I like bottle shows like that. And just them being stuck in a shuttle and shows some engineering genius and stuff. And
do you think that Shuttle Pod 1, because I love that episode too. It's a great episode. And I think it's generally considered by most viewers as a great episode. But I also think about that episode sometimes when I wonder about why fan interest in the series waned so quickly. And also when I think about the fact that fans were coming off of Voyager, and I think they really wanted more of that 24th century storyline and Voyager type stories. Mm-hmm. Also fans of TOS coming in, expecting it to be an actual prequel to TOS, more like what we get in season 4. And then they see an episode like this, where you've got two guys just talking to each other for the whole episode, and it's very slow. And it's very interesting, but do you think that type of story turned off a lot of TOS fans and also Voyager fans coming in?
It does come pretty early in the first season, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the 16th episode, so
okay,
it's a little bit more than halfway through, but yeah.
But I can see that it's not... It's neither... necessarily Star Trek the next generation, nor is it, you know, the pre-original series. It's, and there's your show title, the pre-original series. Anyway, yeah, I could see that it's very character focused on characters. It's trying to get you to know characters better, but you kind of want to know characters better before they get into a situation like that sometimes. Because it reminds me a lot of the elevator clip show episodes that they have on things like Bosom Buddies, where people get stuck in an elevator and they have to just talk to each other because they ran out of money.
Right. Well, they did that with Lwaxana and Odo on Deep Space Nine too.
That's true.
But
that's
it worked really well.
But that wasn't the A plot.
Right.
But like, so you got usually those kind of episodes come later when you really get to know the characters. Yeah. So it's letting us get to know the characters, but if at that point you weren't already invested, then yeah, I can see not appreciating that episode.
Were there any episodes in season one that had not in visual style necessarily, but maybe just in the structure or the feel of the episode that gave you a TOS feel, like you felt like, okay, this is like vintage Star Trek that I love from the original series?
I'd say Civilization reminds me a lot of TOS. It's kind of an undercover, you know, let's not break the non-existent Prime Directive story, but you know,
Captain falls in love with a local woman.
In love, yeah. And yeah. People are poisoning water. Of course, you know, they don't take over the entire planet and, you know, destroy their gods and then leave. So it's not exactly like TOS, right. But I could see where they were trying to. They just weren't cool enough to do that yet. They didn't think about it.
Yeah, Archer wasn't quite as heavy-handed as Kirk in making sure that all planets conformed to his idea of how you should run your society, right?
Right.
What did you think about seeing the Andorians again? finally.
I thought that was incredible. I was on for the, I was on Ready Room for the Andorian episodes before I'd started watching Enterprise. And yeah, seeing the Andorians and going back through TOS, Andorians completely underused.
Yeah.
Of course, they look really silly with just the papier-mâché
right.
antenna. So I love the antenna that like show their anger and surprise and stuff. I like the Andorians. I wish they were used more in TOS instead of just the two episodes that they were.
Well, not just TOS, but they could have used them throughout Star Trek because we really rarely see them. We see them in like the council, like the Federation Council scenes, I think in Star Trek 4, I believe we see one there. Here and there, they sprinkle them around kind of as background characters. But TNG, there's just the one on the holodeck when Law is trying to decide like what form she's going to take.
Right.
And that one doesn't, it looks weird too. It's kind of a strange take on the Andorians. And then DS9, Voyager, can't remember seeing any Andorians.
DS9 could have used some Andorians.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's, judging by their attitudes and stuff in TOS, not in TOS, well, in TOS too, but in Enterprise, I think that DS9 could have had, you know, Federation officers leading the war being Andorians. I think that they would be better suited for it than the humans.
Well, they'd rush in and try to fight right off the bat, though. You know, Starfleet, Federation, they like their diplomacy.
Well, see, the time for diplomacy was past. It's time to send in the Andorians.
Well, what about season two? Season two, we get a few more episodes that I think have a TOS feel to them.
Yeah, season two has, I feel, is a lot more solid. I think that some of the TOS stuff comes in. I like the communicator. I feel like it is more of a sequel to like a piece of the action.
Yeah.
Where McCoy leaves behind his communicator. Ah, that's hilarious. You know, maybe they'll reverse engineer it and build ships and come try to kill us. Yeah, that'll be great. That's funny. But this one just starts with, oh, I left my communicator. And then it's all about them finding it and making matters worse. And yeah. But there's women getting shipped as cargo, which seems very, you know, surprise cargo, like the Medusan in TOS. Mm-hmm. You know, people in boxes and can't look at them or touch them, even though that was just because she was like a princess or something. But then there's a bunch of weird stuff like regeneration and the ones with the time traveling future people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the time traveling future people is that's a topic for a whole other show. We've actually done one about that dedicated to the temporal Cold War and what a concept. What did you think about Carbon Creek though? Going back into the past.
Carbon Creek. It's a very interesting episode to like lead off the season after the cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't expect it. I mean, I did expect it because I've heard, you know, the basic plots of most of the episodes, but
right. It's
just, it was stranger than I expected. I liked it. It wasn't very TOS-y because it completely took place in the past. And
it wasn't TOS-y, but it does play into the lead up in the timeline to, you know, Vulcan contact with Earth. And I know that came on TNG, but you still have to, you know, it all ties together, right?
So, yes.
But what's also interesting about it is the fact that it's not like a time travel episode per se, because it's actually just a story that T'Pol's telling them at the dinner table.
Which I did appreciate. It's not like T'Pol went back in time and had to take her grandmother's place.
Right.
You know, so that history would not be made unright. And she has to break the prime directive by selling Velcro to the humans.
Yes.
You know, breaking her own oath. No, it's just, her grandmother just happens to look exactly like her.
What about, okay, regeneration, you've mentioned it, and you mentioned the Borg earlier on. I know this is not a TOS connection. It would be a TNG connection. But so I think it works quite well. And you seem to really be bothered by the Borg being on Enterprise.
I am bothered by it. I mean, post Voyager, I mean, we've got TNG where, you know, don't look at them. Don't let them touch you. Don't do this. In this one, Phlox gets assimilated and he's just like, oh, I could totally kill these. It's like, wait, why didn't you write that down? I mean, Beverly had to reinvent it in Best of Both Worlds Part 2. And here this crazy alien doctor 150 years previous is just like, oh, I got this. Oh, they were cold or something. Oh, they've been frozen in the Arctic, so their nodules weren't... No. That's... No. Well, and then they never mention their own names, and they unassimilate their own ship. Like, their ship starts getting assimilated, and I'm like, wow, crap's getting real, real. No. We take it all out by next week. It's like, what? Assimilated. Remember in Voyager when the Doctor's hollow emitter from the 29th century fuses with a Borg? That's this kind of thing. You've got 300-year-old, you know, year advanced technology or 150-year advanced technology in literally built into your system. Nah, we'll just take them out. Billions of little microbes.
I hear you. As far as Phlox goes, maybe he did write it down and they saved it on the same disk with all the pictures of the Borg that they took as well. And that mm-hmm. obviously got erased because...
And the pictures of the Ferengi from the security cameras. Right.
They were the people on the NX-01. They're the people who take pictures on with their digital camera, but they never move the files off the card.
Oh, that's what it is. And so when they lose the camera.
Right. That's what happened, I think.
Or they just send them via Snapchat and you can't save them. So it's just like, these are what Ferengi look like. Oh, sorry, 15 seconds are up.
That must be it. So, yeah, the points you mentioned do make you feel like, well, why? The only way you can maybe justify it is that these Borg were not as powerful as the Borg that we see in The Next Generation and Voyager. Of course, they came from that future, though, because they were frozen in the ice in First Contact. But maybe, you know, they hadn't thawed out all the way yet, so they didn't have their full prowl. I don't know. But I thought it worked, though, in terms of... Well, you mentioned the Ferengi. I mean, bringing the Ferengi on the show was ridiculous and should have never, ever happened. But at least the Borg...
What were they thinking?
I don't know what they were thinking with that one. But at least with the Borg, it made sense, and it was kind of a clever little way to create like a temporal... causality loop, I guess you would call it.
And we got some James Cromwell.
Yeah.
You know, with this old speech he talks about, you know, crazy Borg people from the future. Maybe that's these guys. I did appreciate the calls to First Contact. As a whole, it could be just taken out. And if an episode can just be removed from canon without anybody noticing, I think that's not...
Yeah.
Sign of a good episode.
Let me ask you one more thing while we're in season two and we're looking for TOS connections. We already talked about the Andorians a little bit earlier. What did you think about, say, an episode like Bounty where we get to see a Tellarite? I mean, like we're really focused on this Tellarite. What did you think about the Tellarites on Enterprise?
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily make me want to see more Tellarites. Like, it did make me want to see more Andorians. Uh-huh. But it makes me wish that the Tellarites always looked like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the pig masks in TOS are hilariously bad and they're awful. But, you know, in this we've got, you know, actual makeup and I mean, I don't know, TOS, they did their best. I haven't gotten to that episode in Cushman's book, but, you know, I know they did their best with the Tellarites. But it's great seeing the aliens in TOS as they should have looked, or as, you know, your mind's imagination would have them look.
Yeah.
Which is how I used to view the Klingons too, is that, oh, then, you know, we just imagine them to have ridges. But no, we've got, well, I haven't gotten there yet. But I understand that there are episodes that explain it, which they didn't need to do.
There are. So yeah, I agree on the Tellarites. It's nice to see you know, it's not that I think that this is how they always meant for the Tellarites to look and they just couldn't do it. But I think that they did a good job here of extrapolating on the idea that they were pig-like in their appearance, but making it look reasonable instead of when you look at them, you don't just think, oh, there is a pig standing on my bridge.
Yes.
So that was good. All right. Well, one last point here, Landru, again, coming back to the TOS connection. Now that you've watched seasons 1 and 2, and try to forget what you know about season 4 at this point, just imagine if you were writing this series as a TOS guy, everything that you've seen in the first 2 seasons, if you could further develop the series and shape it more into what you wanted to see, what would you do with it?
I mean, all we really know about that era is the Romulan War. And I know that everybody says this, but I'm going to have to agree with them. I think that I would have accelerated the birth of the Federation. And it was an Earth-Romulan War. There's nothing to say that the Earthers couldn't have run off there and fought this war. And maybe the Romulan War and them needing help was part of the building of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe the Andorians and the Tellarites put aside their differences to help Earth out, you know, and the Vulcans come and everybody does their part. I think that maybe instead of this Zindi arc thing where they're hunting for the Death Star or components to build the Death Star so that they can hunt the people down. And I don't know, I'm only like 7 episodes into that season. But yeah, I think that that's what I would do is introduce more Romulans. I don't know how I would, especially with season 1 and 2 already existing, do the whole, oh, we didn't have visual communications kind of thing. Like maybe they were incompatible and I don't know, but I like the idea of the building the Romulan War and the birth of the Federation, especially if I knew that I only had 4 seasons to do it. If I knew that I only had 2 more seasons, that's what I'd do. Is build it like that.
Yeah, you know, I often wonder if they had known that they only had 2 more seasons, would they have gone with that Zindi arc in the first place?
I don't know.
So,
I mean, you look at things like, you know, Lost, they had an end date. They knew when they were going to stop making episodes and did whole entire arcs that didn't amount to a hill of beans.
Well, that's because when they woke up every morning, they had no idea what the next step in the script was. They were just making stuff up on a daily basis.
It's true.
And they could. I mean, they weren't working in a framework like Star Trek. It's kind of like, what happens on this island? I don't know. Got any ideas today?
Time travel.
Let's make the island jump through time. Yes.
Okay. So, time travel. Let's do it.
Yeah. So focus on the Romulan War. That seems to be the most common answer. And I think same for me. That's what I would have wanted to do it. I've outlined this on the show before. I would have wanted to do it over the course of 7 seasons, but it is pretty much what you describe, which is birth of the Federation, Romulan War, get us closer, to a final bridge that would jump us to TOS.
But you don't really want to like get all the way like Star Wars Episode 3 ends with every character exactly where we meet them in Episode 4, which takes place 20 years later. I'm not a fan of that. So I wouldn't like put I would hate, and that's probably how they would have done it had it lasted 7 years. They would have done the jump ahead thing like they actually do at the end of the series. But it would have been like, you know, Admiral Archer laying the foundation for the, you know, the 1701.
Yeah.
And then that would be terrible.
Yeah, that would be terrible. So, yeah. I would not want to get away too much, though, from the style of storytelling in seasons 1 and 2, because I think it's what gives Enterprise its flavor. I think it's what makes it its own show and makes you more interested in the characters. And
it has arcs, but it, you know, it also has good standalone episodes.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you shared your basic thoughts on Enterprise. And I'm curious now, after you get through the end of the series, well, I'm curious what you think about season three when you get to the end of it. My advice on season three that I'll give you, as I give everyone, is watch it as quickly as you possibly can. Because
see, that's my problem. I stopped.
You can't stop. You have season three works best if you watch three or four episodes a day and you just blast right through it, because then you can feel the narrative that runs through the season. When you watch it, like when it was on first run and I was watching it one episode every week, and sometimes maybe I couldn't watch it when it was on and I recorded it and watched that a few days later, so then I had an even longer gap between episodes. It doesn't really feel, it doesn't work as well. So watch it as quickly as you can.
Okay.
That's my advice. All right. But we'll have to have you back on down the road and find out what you think about the Zindi arc and, of course, the very TOS-centric season four. But until then, Landrew, tell everyone where they can find you if they want to hear more about the original series or anything else that you're doing.
They can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. They can also find me on Standard Orbit, which I do with Mike from Commentary Trek Stars, where we talk about TOS weekly. We do commentaries and we do character analysis and
is that a multi-plural?
Talk about the themes. We talk about the themes that we find in TOS and just have a good time.
Yeah, it's a great show, a lot of fun. And you mentioned Mark Cushman earlier in his book, and you guys have had him on there as well to talk about.
Yes, he's incredible. TOS. We've had That's true. We've had Mark Cushman. We've had John Tenuto. He's doing a series with us, Commentaries.
Uh-huh.
We're doing commentaries on all of the con episodes of Star Trek.
And also a name familiar to Enterprise fans, Dave Rossi, who was a producer of Enterprise, tried to move into the show at one point, I think, didn't he?
Oh, he did. Yes. He stayed for a while. It was fun. We have to have him back on again.
Yeah, Dave is always fun to talk to.
He produced the remastered effects for the original series. So he's got some unique insights into the minutiae.
Definitely.
But yeah, it's always good. It's always fun.
So everyone, check out Drew and Mike on Standard Orbit. And thanks again for joining me on the show today, Drew.
No problem. It was fun.
All right. Well, Landrew had to run along, get back to Beta 3 because the locals get a little bit restless if he's gone for too long. So I'm going to wrap up the show here. It was great talking to Drew today. I hope everyone enjoyed it. It was interesting for me to hear a TOS perspective on Enterprise from someone who is just starting to watch the series fairly recently. It's you know, a different perspective from when you saw it when it first came on. So I hope you enjoyed that. But it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The Enterprise.
Because if you break it down, you've got a flying saucer with rockets. It's everything that he was trying to avoid, but it's so much more than that.
He found a way to make a flying saucer with rockets make sense.
Earl Grey.
Encounter at Farpoint.
The alien ship is literally shooting at and killing colonists on the planet, and he's like...
I haven't had my talk-to-talk with Beverly yet.
The Ready Room.
Star Trek continues.
Even on just seeing a corridor wall, you'll see, like, there's just a slash of red against the wall. That's a stylistic choice that they were making in that era. So Matt has a great eye while we're shooting a scene.
The Orb.
The full NDS-9.
It's a milestone in the Cliff Bull directing of Star Trek and Deep Space Nine. Defiant marks the final non-appearance of Sirach Lofton in a Cliff Bull directed episode.
To the journey!
Innocence rewrite.
We'll use a deflector dish to emit a tachyon beam, fire a few photon torpedoes, blow up the anomaly of the week, and then we'll just fly off into space like we do at the end of every week.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Remembering Cliff Bull with Larry Nemechek.
But the thing about Cliff personally was that I'll always remember, and it comes through in this transcript. He's a pretty plain spoken guy, and he would call a spade a spade. And what's your rating on this podcast? Are you pretty much up to
Warp 5?
Prequel design.
Or just, you know, for the sake of the actor, so they felt like, in the design people, they felt like this was a real place that people would believe. And I just really appreciate that.
Literary treks.
John Jackson Miller, Absent Enemies.
And of course, the larger thing about the whole phasing thing is it allowed me to tell a story that I think had a Star Trek feel to it, with regard to the issue of war and peace.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, or Zune, or you can download or stream from the website. So grab some shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. While you're grabbing shows, if you're over in iTunes and you have a moment to leave us a star rating or a written review, we'd love to hear from you. It does help other Enterprise fans find the show as they search iTunes for Star Trek podcasts and Enterprise podcasts, which aren't the easiest thing to find in the very, very deep listings they have there on iTunes. It only takes a minute. We love to hear from you. So drop by, leave us a star rating and a written review. And if you'd like to send us other feedback about the show, there are a variety of ways you can do that. You can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about the show, about Enterprise, about anything you want to discuss related to Star Trek. That's a great place to do it. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And you'll also find us on Twitter, where we're tweeting away about Star Trek all the time under username trekfm. If you'd like to find me, you'll find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then on the network, you'll find me with Matthew Rushing on two shows. One is Literary Treks, where we talk Star Trek books and comics, and we interview authors. And also, we do The Orb together, which is very much like this show, except we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. You'll also find me on The Ready Room every week with hosts from all across the network and special guests as we talk about Star Trek news and all five live-action Star Trek series. And then I also have my own interview show called Matter Stream, where we talk about topics loosely related to Star Trek. Lots of creative, lots of science, and other social topics there as well. So check that out if you're interested. Before we let you go, we'd also like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, and that is Audible.com. Audible helps us bring Warp 5 and all of our shows to you each week, and they are the premier source for audiobooks online with more than 150,000 titles to choose from. They put hundreds of new titles on every single week, from classics to current bestsellers. There's even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation and Spock's World. Audible has something for everyone. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm to sign up. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Warp 5 and the network. We'd also like to invite you to check out Andrew Allen's album, Smooth Federation. If you like the jazz cover of Where My Heart Will Take Me that we use here on Warp 5, you're going to love Andrew's album. In addition to this track, he has 9 other jazz renditions of music from across Star Trek. So go pick it up today in iTunes or on Amazon. Really great stuff there by Andrew. I love the album, and I know you will too. One more thing you can do to help us keep Warp 5 coming to you is to make a donation to the network. We have some original artwork for you over at trek.fm/donate. These are aliens from Star Trek. They're done by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website, and we have them as badges and as art prints. We have different contribution levels for you to choose from, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. So go check it out at trek.fm/donate. Choose an option that's right for you, and we really thank you for supporting the network and helping us keep everything going. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks everyone for listening, and please join us again next week here in the Decon Chamber for another episode of Warp 5.